members, our support staff, everybody is on the platform. A very good morning to you all. Today we are meeting the Department of Employment and Labour, who are going to engage us on the 2022 appropriation bill. Thank you very much. I take it that the delegation is led by the Honourable Minister, Honourable Tulas Ncwesi. I hope the Deputy Minister, Honourable Boitumelo Moloi, is also on board, and the DG, Mr. Thobile Lamati, and the whole employment and labour family, you are all welcome. We'll be engaging with your good selves on the 2022 appropriation bill. Before we proceed, can I check with you, Darren? Do we have any apologies?
Chairperson, no. The only apology we received was on behalf of the Minister of Employment and Labour, who is attending the cabinet meeting.
Okay.
Otherwise, we don't have any other apologies, Chair.
So who's leading the delegation?
The Director General.
Okay. DG?
The Deputy Minister, Honourable Chairperson, I'm here in the platform. I'm not sure whether is it for officials or what.
No. I remember in my introduction I did welcome you. I was just checking whether you are not perhaps didn't join the minister wherever she is. We did welcome you at DM, Honourable Boitumelo Moloi. Thank you very much for being in the in our meeting. As you know, we are dealing with the 2022 appropriation bill. I think we'll proceed a few housekeeping rules. Whoever is talking, would expect that both her mic and the video are on. But the rest of us should have our microphones off until such time that you have got a contribution to make. Honourable Deputy Minister Boitumelo Moloi, we were going to give you about 45 minutes, you and your team, to make your presentation, and then after that, you bring back the meeting back to me. And the oral members would make their inputs, and after that again will allow you and the team to respond. DM, the meeting is back to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and your esteemed members of SCOA. Yesterday, I'm sure you are aware that it was our budget day in the National Assembly. Through the mini plenaries, and today we are here having been invited by SCOA, a parliamentary committee empowered by Section 4, Subsection 3 of the Money Amendment Procedures Related Matters to request briefing on what the budget is buying. Part of what I'm going to be saying, Honourable Members, is that I would like how these events are flowing from one to the next. I must say that, of course, as we are here, a portfolio committee on employment and labor is also sitting as we speak with CCMA, and among the questions you might have asked about, or you are going to be asking about the CCMA. So we are having two committees sitting at the same time discussing almost the same matters. So CCMA is the only matter that I will touch on in my exploitation of this generosity you have offered me, Honourable Chairperson, as all other items in our presentation will be capably handled by our DG, Thobile Lamati. And perhaps before I can even go any further, as already alluded to the fact that our Minister, Ntate Thulas Ncwesi, is currently attending the cabinet meeting, and who would have loved to have been here as well. As a result, he sends his apology, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson and esteemed members of the committee, these tough economic conditions do really call upon all of us to be extraordinarily creative and innovative. And in the Department of Employment and Labor, we do try, but it was tough in the last financial year, particularly when all of us were met by huge budgetary cuts. I'm sure all of us are aware of that, occasioned by not only the sluggish economy, by the COVID-19 also. So these huge cuts in our department were more pronounced in one of our entities, especially the CCMA was the hardest hit. I know in our department, one person who was not getting any sleep was our accounting officer, the DG. He had us, and he had the committees of parliament, and he had many other people asking him, where is the money for CCMA? And I'm sure he's going to be elaborating further on this matter. So in this particular meeting, you are asking us as to whether the proposed additional allocation of 120 million over the NTF is sufficient to address the increasing caseloads within CCMA. At least you are asking us about the additional funds, not about the budget cuts. Chairperson, honorable members, normally when we are asked about the budget cuts, one of the expenditure areas that was hardest hit was the remuneration of the commissioners in the CCMA itself, and everything else connected with that. It therefore makes sense to us to start there when we get any money whatsoever. So during this presentation of the 2022-2023 budget, an additional 39 million was made available to the CCMA in particular from the 120 million allocated to the CCMA over the NTF period. And among others, honorable members, these funds will be utilized to increase in part-time commissioners' allocation. But we must also hasten to say that they may not be restored to pre-COVID-19 levels. And yes, honorable chairperson, we are still deep in the forest, if you get what I mean, because we, even with the additional funding provided to the CCMA, there remains a lot of prioritization, reprioritization, as well as creativity that must be done with the little that we have. There are still many other areas that will be affected, like the sheriff's board processes. But chairperson, as I've already indicated, that we have among us the capable Director General of the Department who's here, and he's with our CFO, and at the Maduna, we've got the COO, Mayor Marsha Bronkhorst. We've got also here Deputy Director General, that is Sam Rotoba, who's also responsible for public employment services. And I think we've got, among others, we've got commissioners, both of the UIF and the compensation fund amongst us. So at this point in time, Honorable Chairperson and esteemed members of the committee, if you allow that I ask the DG and the team to get into the nitty-gritties of the meeting. And I thank you for your audience, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable members of the committee, DM and the colleagues. I'm going to ask Matapelo to put up the presentation, Chairperson. Ms. Mataboge. Thank you. Move the slides, please. So the presentation, Chair, will consist of the following items: the introduction, which will cover the background to service delivery environment, our budget allocation, which is Vote 31, progress on youth employment initiatives, and the budget allocation for CCMA, and all other issues that the committee may wish to ask us. I'm going to breeze through the slides, Chair, on the constitutional mandate and the policy mandate of the department.
assuming that the college committee has read those and move straight into the slide that has to do with the budget allocation, and then we start the discussion there. Matapel, can you move to that slide, which is the allocation? Firstly, before we go to the allocation, just to indicate that, the slide is okay. Just to indicate that these are the programs of the department, which is administration, inspection and enforcement services, public employment services, labor market policy and industrial relations, unemployment insurance fund, compensation fund. These two are scheduled to a public entities, still tied though, with the department. Next slide. The next slide are the entities that are fully Schedule 3A entities that are not tied with the department, except in the fact that they continue to implement the mandate of the department. When I mean tied, the two funds, UIF and Compensation Fund, due to their legislation, they still make the Director General as an accounting authority, and they have advisory boards instead of a fully fledged board. So we are in the process of unbundling them so that they can be fully fledged Schedule 3A entities. So Commission for Conciliation, Mediation, Arbitration, CCMA, and NEDLAC, Productivity South Africa, supported employment enterprises, are also entities of the department. This just to show the committee our footprint. We have 125 labor centers across the country, and we have nine provincial offices, and of course with the head office and the two funds and the entities that I've spoken about. We provide services at 30 satellite offices, 41 Tucson centers, and 447 visiting points. Next slide. So these are these are the priorities that the Department of Labor shoulders as part of its mandate in terms of the medium-term strategy framework of government. Priority one, a capable, ethical, and developmental state. Priority two, economic transformation and job creation. Priority three, education, skills, and health. Priority four, consolidating the social wage through reliable and basic services. And priority five, special development, human settlements, and local government. Priority five, it's not directly applicable to us, but we put it there because we participate in the district model that has been adopted by government, and by virtue of the location of our offices in those districts as well. Priority six, social cohesion, safer communities. Priority seven, a better Africa and a better world. Next slide. So this is just a distribution in terms of how each program fits into the priorities as outlined. Next slide. Chair, this is the slide that I was talking about, slide 13. For the 2022-2023, our final allocation is 3.9 billion, and with a baseline increase of 396 million. So over the MTF, you can see that we have increases for 2023-2024, we have 412 million, and then for 2024-2025, it's 41. Now, the increases to the baseline across the medium term are mainly in respect of a newly introduced allocation for the Government Technical Advisory Center, GTEC, as well as an increased allocation to the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration. As part of the presidential employment initiative. We have appointed GTEC as an implementing agent to assist us with youth employment, in partnership, of course, with the youth development agency. So that's the purpose for that allocation. And of course, we have signed an agreement with GTEC on that scope. So the budget additions and also reductions for CCMA for 2022, we've increased their budget, and in fact across the MTF, their budget has been increased. The COE for 2022-2023. In 2023, we expect a reduction of six million. And in 2024, we expect that reduction to continue. For goods and services, we have a reduction of 844,000. And for the next 2023-2024, it's just over 1.3 million. And for 2024-2025, it's just 1.4. So for GTEC, the allocation is for the two financial years 2022-2023 and 2023 and 2024. So those are the allocation, and we have not been given an indicative allocation for 2024 and 2025 for this program. The SCE, there's an allocation of 7 billion, and that also increases in the next financial years from 7292 to 7355 and 7684. So the baseline increase of sitting at 3.9 billion as a total allocation for the department, including the entities. Next slide. The earmarked allocations, CCMA is getting just over a billion. And that increases over the next two financial years from 1046 to 1051, and in the last the outer year from the last outer year to 1097. The compensation fund, that allocation is for all the public servants, given the fact that the government is an exempted employer in terms of the compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. So this allocation sits in the Public Employment Services budget for all the claims for public servants that are injured on duty or contract an occupational disease at work. And of course, that GTEC allocation, NEDLAC will be getting 58 million. Productivity South Africa, 61 million, SCE 166, and the total earmarked allocation, which is transfers to the entities, including GTEC this time around, is just over 1.6 billion. And the compensation of employees is 1.4, and that's there's a ceiling on that, and that budget may not be reclassified. And that leaves us for 2022-2023 with a budget of just over 308 billion. Next slide. Final allocation is at 3.9, the less transfers 1.6, and the COE ceiling 1.4. So in essence, for us to be able to do the work that we do, we have a budget of 868 million, and that budget increases over the next two outer financial years. So what are our pressures for 2022-2023 that were created by the budget reduction? For one, transport equipment and vehicles, we have inspectors, we have officials that go out to also canvass for job opportunities under public employment services. So transport is a very important tool of trade for the department, and that will be affected. Also, we're building new offices, and the procurement of furniture, is also going to be affected. Capital projects, new labor centers, there's a greater demand for us to have new labor centers, especially in the townships. I can mention Khayelitsha, for instance. There's been a demand for us to have the labor center there. That will also be affected. And the renovation of the Ulundi labor center, as well as the installation of Georgia water tanks and generators, that should be finalized with urgency. We've identified those Georgia tanks and generators as part of our business continuity plan. Because when there's load shedding, often we have to send staff home, and we lose that day in terms of service delivery. And also when we don't have water, we often have to send staff home because we can't run an office where there's no water. And in order to mitigate that risk, we thought of Georgia water tanks and generators. Another machinery and equipment limitation in the acquisition of laptops and desktops for newly appointed officials for the financial year 2022 and 2023. Next slide. On youth employment initiatives, the slides that follow will appraise the committee on overall possible service delivery implications of the proposed allocation of 11.7 billion over the 2022 MTF relative to the 2021 budget estimates. We will appraise the committee on the degree of effectiveness and efficiency in the utilization of funds allocated towards the first and second phase of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, including expenditure reports. We will also further appraise the committee on the effectiveness of plans and allocations linked to the proposed budget allocation towards the third phase of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. These components are being coordinated by the PMO in the presidency and implemented by different line departments. As a department, we are co-partners in this process and are specifically responsible for the implementation of the Pathway Management Network, which is a core component of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. The focus of the stimulus and the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative is reflected in the following slides, and we then concentrate on the responsibilities that we hold as a department. Next slide. Just a background to the Presidential Youth Employment Stimulus. As indicated, the Presidential Employment Stimulus is coordinated by the PMO in the presidency and implemented by different departments and agencies. It is one of the key interventions under the Economic and Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, and has thus far, since October 2020, created over 850,000 opportunities through a combination of job creation, job retention, and livelihood support programs. 85% of the jobs created by the Presidential Employment Stimulus have gone to youth. This includes over 500,000 young people placed as school assistants since the inception of the stimulus. Slide. In this slide, we're indicating that the PYEI is a direct response to the challenge that too many young people are not transitioning from learning to earning. The intervention sets out priority actions which together seek to stimulate and aggregate demand and provide a seamless mechanism for young people to be linked to the opportunities generated and receive support appropriate to their context and pathway. The core components of the PYEI are captured in the diagram. As evidence, the Pathway Management Network, which we have responsibility for, is at the core of the PYE. Next slide. The PYEI components and responsibilities, the NSF and the CTAS, those are the core outcomes, reorienting funding in the skilling system towards demand-led approaches, e.g. pay for performance model and create an agile skills planning mechanism for current and emerging demand, budget and targets for 2021, 2022, and 2023, budget of 400 million as part of the employment stimulus, target 8,000 young people trained and placed in employment. This for the progress is that adjudication of pay for performance RFP is in progress. The status is that the National Skills Fund is in the final stages of adjudication for the pay for performance model, waiting approval from the DG of Higher Education and Training. The DHET continues to coordinate demand-led skilling work streams in the priority areas of the PYEI. If you look at the local ecosystem enablement, where we have DDIC and IDC, they design and implement interventions that create an enabling ecosystem that young people to enter into and sustain forms of enterprise and self-employment. For 2021 and 2022, they didn't have a budget. The application for funding was not approved for phase two of the employment stimulus. And the status, the revised the fund design and will request for funding in the MTF was processed, additionally crowding in other sources of funding to enable a pilot to be implemented in 2022-2023. The committee is now active to coordinate all efforts in government to support local economies and to link more closely with district development model. Next slide. The National Youth Service, these are the lead departments, youth, women, youth and persons with disabilities, NYDA, GTEC and the Jobs Fund. The core outcomes being to create opportunities for young people to meaningfully contribute to their communities, develop critical skills and expand their social capital. And the budget for that was 591 million as part of the employment stimulus. Target 50,000 opportunities within 6 months. Progress, recruitment is in progress and status service providers have been contracted and recruitment is underway to place all 50,000 young people through the National Pathway Management Network. The first 15,000 will be in post this month and the remainder in June. Next slide. The Pathway Management Network brings together work seekers and opportunity holders to address the barriers that young people face when seeking to transition into and succeed in the labor market. For the employment and labor, GTEC and the Jobs Fund, the aim is to stimulate and aggregate demand, address barriers young people face and link them to opportunities for earning, learning and support. For 2021-22, the budget allocation was 238 million. For 2022 and 2023, the budget allocation is 304 million. This funding is an earmarked allocation which to be transferred to GTEC, who will manage the allocation of funds on our behalf, and we've started doing that, started transferring money to GTEC in line with the drawdown agreement that we have with them. Targets for the funding for PMN Innovation Fund, we have at least 8 contracted intermediaries to implement projects against the aims of the PMN. Ecosystem Manager ensures that 300,000 young people registered on the PMN receiving support through multi-channels, including SA Youth Mobile, social media platforms and physical sites of Department of Employment and Labor, NYDA, to 60,000 youth provided with access to employment opportunities and or income earning opportunities funded by government and or income earning opportunities from work created by themselves. This is over and above target of employment services system in our APP. Next slide. So the focus of the work, the process of establishing and operationalizing the pathway management network within the Department of Employment and Labor has comprised the following: establishing the institutional and funding arrangements, securing funding from National Treasury as part of the presidential employment stimulus, and 3, transferring the funds to Jobs Fund, GTEC, the partner appointed to support the implementation of PMN. The progress in this regard is reflected in the following slides. Next slide. We have signed a memorandum of understanding that we entered into between 8 government departments with mandates relevant for addressing youth and unemployment and the NYTA. to coordinate and implement the PMN. The agreement was developed in November 2021 and signed by all parties in March 2022. This has created the basis for the establishment of a coordinating committee with representatives from across these departments to guide and support the work of the PMN. In addition, the Department of Employment and Labor, working with the Presidency, has established a technical committee of network partners across government, private sector, and not-for-profit organizations. This committee is responsible for creating connections across the PMN to enable young people to have visibility across partners and to streamline this process for opportunity holders. To consolidate these arrangements, the partners have developed a draft cooperation agreement that commits partners to a set of key principles to ensure the success of the pathway management network. Right? Further, we have developed a cooperation agreement which provides a framework for collaboration between government and non-governmental partners, including private sector and social sector, in building the National Pathway Management Network as part of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention. This creates a basis for additional partners to come on board to give expression to the commitment from all partners to ensure that young people are visible across the National Pathway Management Network and have equity of access to opportunities that are shared across the network. This cooperation agreement has not yet been signed by partners, but will be completed within the next quarter as arrangements are all finalized in terms of appointment of additional partners. Next slide. This cooperation agreement requires partners to commit to the following principles: to be youth-centered, to ensure a streamlined process for opportunity holders, to promote inclusive hiring, to provide free access for young people, and to comply with compliance with the Protection of Personal Information Act and any other relevant legislation as applicable to the partners relating to the storage of data of the National Pathway Management Network. Slide. The status of the work, efficiencies through bringing in other partners. In addition to the work we do through the Department of Employment and Labor Centers, we also have established partnership with government and non-government networks. Youth Explorer is located at UCT. It maintains a set of verified service points such as centers of higher education, social services, health services, and others. This information is available publicly and can be used by other network members to provide accurate information to young people about nearby services. The Youth Explorer is supported by a range of development partners, Youth Service Platform. The Department of Science and Innovation has partnered with MLab Southern Africa to develop a national platform to enable particularly unemployed youth and youth-owned SMEs to address services and resources through existing intermediaries like hubs. The mobile application is targeted at youth as the primary users. To date, there's been just under 5,000 downloads of the app, with users accessing education, employment, and education-related services in their area. Next slide. Status of partnership with government and non-government networks. Basic packages of support, which is being implemented by UCT and UJ through this program. The National PMN is testing a new delivery model for promoting young people's inclusion, mental health and well-being, and to ultimately foster a reconnection to the education system and labor market. The CATA platform is a national career advice portal that provides young people with guidance on subjects, career and occupation choices. NYDA is also a partner to the Pathway Management Network, and through its jobs program will train 75,000 young people in 2022-2023 on job preparedness, work readiness and life skills training to pathway young people into opportunities. Slide. Further, we're developing strong partnership with the private sector, both through other networks and through a direct interface with employment opportunities holders in the public, private, and non-government sector. Key partners include YES, Youth Employment Services, which aims to create 1 million work opportunities for unemployed Black youth and transform the lives of these young youth while helping to grow the businesses in which they are placed. CAPES, which is Confederation of Associations in the Private Employment Sector, and currently represent private employment services members from four affiliated associations, namely the Federation of African Professional Staffing Organization and the others. Next slide. An MOA was signed between Dell, GTEC, Precedence, and NYDA to establish the Professional Youth Employment Fund to deliver on the objectives of the PYEI, specifically the PMN and the National Youth Service. This agreement was signed by all parties in September 2021. To leverage the capacity that government has developed with the Jobs Fund, the Department of Employment and Labor in NYDA applied to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to request that the Jobs Fund, represented by GTEC here, established the PYE fund. The OCPO approval letter was received on the 11th of June 2021, including administration costs, an indication that GTEC will be responsible for contracting goods and services on behalf of Dell, and ensuring that this is fair, equitable, transparent, and cost-effective. In April 21, Dell applied for funding for the operationalization of the PMN. The Dell's application was reviewed, and on 19 August 2021, the National Treasury issued an allocation letter approving the full amount. However, there were delays in the process, and the funds for the 2021-2022 was not transferred to the Jobs Fund by the financial year end. Next slide. To address the challenges, we have submitted a request for rollover to the National Treasury. Further, we have since reviewed our processes, and we have now signed the SLA with GTEC, which will allow the budget to flow for 2022 and 2023 before the end of May. There's also a readiness to utilize the funds to GTEC or Jobs Fund. The Jobs Fund has issued the request for proposals for partners in the Innovation Fund to allow the PMN to expand the way in which it reaches young people. The mechanisms in place to address barriers and to both increase the aggregate demand. The adjudication process is complete, and now that the SLA has been signed, these appointments can now take place. The Jobs Fund is also with support from Dell, received permission from the OCPO to appoint the pathway manager, which would in turn unlock further resources from both the private and development sector. This appointment can now be finalized. Slide. Outcomes of the work thus far. Since they officially launched the Pathway Management Network on 16 June 2022 by President, thousands of young people have been encouraged to access the network through various available channels. A total number of 612,996,000 young people have been placed since the launch of the Pathway Management Network. Many of these young people have been placed as school assistants in phase one and two of the programs funded through the Professional Youth Employment Stimulus. The Pathway Management Network has also supported 144,884 young people to access work seeker counseling. The Pathway Management Network is one of the most important mechanisms of creating access to opportunities for young people and to help transition them from learning to earning. Next slide. The recruitment of 250 psychology interns is part of the Professional Economic Stimulus Allocation. The Presidential Economic Stimulus 2, which is under the Public Employment Services allocation of 200 million to Dell to create 250 intern opportunities for unemployment graduates, allow the department to have the funding to undertake active labor market policy interventions to facilitate entry of unemployed graduates into a work and learning opportunity within Dell. Even though this is a one-year opportunity, there are a number of multiplier effects in terms of the collective impact of the intervention on both individual participants and those that they support. The focus of the 20 million in terms of the bid that was approved was to recruit intern psychologists for the purpose of capacitating labor centers to deliver on the mandate to provide support to many unemployed workers devastated by unemployment. Recruiting these professionals back in psychology has proven to be an exciting process, as they have to be carefully screened to ensure that they derive value from the opportunity. This is important because if we get the initial on board right, it helps us develop a core of young people that can make a significant contribution to government plans to build back the future. The program funding was allocated in early October and work immediately started on the recruitment. Thus far, 188 young psychologists have been appointed. Dell also has to ensure that the psychologists have the correct registration for accreditation by the Health Practitioners Council, which governs counseling services in South Africa. Next slide. Continuing funding of the employment scheme, Dell requested the National Treasury to roll over the 20 million stimulus funds to continue paying the stipends to the new interns. This will also enable the Dell team that is working on the project to learn from the experience and implement the current year's recruitment much faster, as no outside consultants are utilized. and no further recruitment costs are incurred by the state. This is a Dell effort, working in collaboration with the Pathway Management Network and the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative team from the presidency. For the month of March, an amount of 182,935,000 was paid in stipend, and for April, 379,962 was paid. By the end of the program, Dell would have paid a total of 20 million to young graduates. The financial support and the work experience is immeasurable value to the participants in the employment scheme. Next slide. So this is the number of 188 that have been appointed across the provinces. I'm not going to go through that, Chair, if you allow. Next slide. Increased allocation to the CCMA during the preparation of the 2022, as I indicated, an additional 39 million was made available to CCMA from the 120 million allocated to CCMA over the MTF. These funds will be utilized as follows to address some of the challenges that are faced by the CCMA: increase in part-time commissioners allocation, as mentioned by the Deputy Minister, resuscitation of the refresh process of the ICT infrastructure. Next slide. Despite the additional funding provided to the CCMA in response to the budget reduction that were experienced in the prior year, the following remained challenged. Unfunded vacancies were placed on hold as part of the reprioritization measures. Limited number of days were allocated to part-time commissioners in hearing cases. Continuous part-head matters because of limited capacity. Implementation of the enforcement strategy to execute CCMA awards and to enhance social justice. Consequently, the shadow board process will be affected. Next slide. The impact of budget limitation on the CCMA activities continues. Inability to implement the information technology strategy to improve the business process and deliver services. The CCMA discretionary mandate, that is training, has been severely reduced due to the complexity of the geographic areas that impact the CCMA in collecting the cases outside the provincial / regional offices. Variable cost per case increase for costs such as venue hire, travel, accommodation, and subsistence cost due to the increase in fuel and other maintenance costs. Most of the travel cost in case disbursement is influenced by the vast travel distances. This is mostly in provinces such as Free State, Northern Cape, Limpopo, and the Eastern Cape. Equal pay for work of equal value. Specific provision on EP, equal pay for work of equal value included in the EE Amendment Act and EE regulations and code of good practice developed and implemented, applicable to both public and private sector employers. Awareness campaign between 18 and 31st May 22 trade unions to raise awareness and create work activities, and monitoring of compliance done with the annual EE reports as submitted by the employers. CCMA and Labor Court can enforce compliance and issue remedies and penalties. Next slide. That's the end, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. I will then request the honorable members to interact with the presentation. Honorable members, you know how we do it. Can I get indications of honorable members who would like to to interact with the presentation? Honorable members?
Mlenzana.
Honorable Mlenzana.
Honorable Dikhale, Chair.
Honorable Dikhale. Members.
Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso. Any other person? Honorable members, I know some are busy struggling with connectivity. Darren, you'll indicate if there are other members that would like to pose questions. Honorable Lenzana, please go.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister and the team. Perhaps a person just wanted to show face that at least I'm not a robot. If you allow me, I can switch off the video because of poor connectivity.
Please proceed, Lenzana.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks. Chairperson, let me start by appreciating two things. One, let me appreciate the presentation, DM and your team. It's a very, very clear narration of what the department is actually doing. And two, let me also appreciate that your programs, as you present, there's a clear attachment of numbers in terms of intervention, and it's mostly affecting the youth. So then, you are one way or the other assisting government in terms of trying to reduce this unemployment crisis in the country. Just two things. One, let me check. As I'm saying, just I've been talking of the clear number punching in terms of intervention. DM, one would like now to know, in terms of your cash flow, is your cash flow meeting, or no, let me put it the other way around. Is your expenditure, the actual, meeting your cash flow projections? I say you are talking of figures in terms of money. Are you able to catch up in terms of spending with the money as projected? Do you have enough capacity to spend, so to speak? That's one question that one would like. I see that in your presentation you are somehow crying of the cuts and all. If now one would begin to want to stand in your shoes, would you have some justification that the little that you have been given, you were able to spend accordingly? That's one part. Then the second part is we have been hearing from a distant DM about, particularly during COVID, when the COVID was at the height, that there would be allegations of mismanagement, there would be allegations of corruption and all, particularly by those who would always cry foul about corruption. I don't want to be seen to be racist, Chairperson, hence I am trying to glide over this particular question. But Chairperson, if you feel that I'm gliding too much over, You as a Chairperson will then be able to dig deeper for the DM to understand. It was only those two. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Romblins and Robert Dikhale.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to you and the Honorable Members. Good morning to our Deputy Minister, Mevalui Ralocha, and the Department. Chairperson, let me join my colleague, Honorable Mlenzana, in welcoming the presentation, which, as I was listening to it, it was specific, and you are able to measure what they are talking about. They even put the time frames, or let me just say the presentation was time-bound. And on that note, we want to say we welcome the presentation, Chairperson. Yeah, I heard in the presentation they are talking about 850,000 opportunities that they created. I have a request that they tell us as to where are these happening, in which provinces. And the other thing, if we can be finished with the information as to what are these people doing? Is it 6 months employment, or is it EPWP, CWP? Those programs would want to know. And if it is this 6 months job opportunities, Chairperson, how will we then come up with a plan or idea of assisting these people to have a permanent job? The other thing, Chair, I want to commend the department on the program of CCMA, because I have noticed that, especially in my constituency, whenever people have challenges, they will run to the CCMA and they will come up with their stress removed. That's the only two things, Chair, that I wanted to talk about. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Tikhale, Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Deputy Minister and the Chief. And thanks for the detailed presentation which has been made before the committee. Chair, I just want to start here first on the issue or which was presented on the last or second last slide of the Department of Labor, which are a request. In fact, that there should be a consideration of, you know, by the Treasury to consider their rollovers so that they are able to complete whatever that was not attended to with the same budget allocation, so that at least they are able to meet again those demands or areas of, you know, services, so that they can fulfill the objectives of the mandate of the department. I'm referring specifically on the issue of, you know, some unfunded vacancies, goods and services, which is very key in order to, you know, to deliver on the issues such as training and, you know, and a number of, you know, areas of attention that they needed to complete. So I think it's very, very much important, because you would understand the situation if there isn't no training, no workshop or whatsoever that is taking place on the ground, which is something that is necessary to, from time to time, to make sure that there's always a good relations at the workflow level, workplace level, between the employers and the employees. So in the absence of such training or intervention, it will create a very serious unstable labor practice. So I think as a committee, we need to consider that request. But I also want to check, you know, on the issue of affirmative action, how does the department has been able to confidently say that this practice, it has been, you know, smooth running in as far as the information filtering the department is concerned? Because I have a little doubt, that some private unscrupulous employers have been violating this, you know, continuously. So I just want to get from the department what percentage of statistical information would you say there has been, you know, a good compliance or very bad compliance? Who are the culprits? You know, do you have the capacity to monitor that all along before even the amendment bill in the process? So I think it is also important because I think it's one of the cornerstone of our legislation in order to bring about transformation at the workplace level. And lastly, Chair, it's on the on the issue of Honorable Khale has raised the issue of expanded public works program. What does the department do in order not to replace the ordinary public works, jobs with extended public works program, such that now we are able to see that people are permanent in their jobs, or because otherwise, given the situation of unemployment and levels of poverty in the country, one would readily look for something that could sustain income for families. So such opportunities would provide a better life for people, especially those that do not have jobs, if they are employed permanently. Thank you very much, Chair. And lastly, Chair, can I quickly finish with this one? Because one would not believe it. I don't know from the Department of Labor perspective view, this matter of, some chief executive officers, both in the private and some extent state-owned entities, earning exorbitant salaries, on top of what they are doing now, of denying workers their living wage, etc. At what point can the department come in that particular space? Is there any way that it can come in that space? So that this thing of chief executive officers earning exorbitant salaries, give themselves, such as the one that of Sibani, whose chief executive is earning over 300 million rand per annum, that workers cannot be given any reasonable increase. It's really unfair. So I just want to know, at what point is this matter now going to be attended at one time? Because it really destabilizes workplace and work environment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Taiso. Can I check, is there another honorable member that I might have left out? No. Let's see, a second bite. Ron Lenzana, do you have anything to add?
No, Chair, I'm fine. Chair.
Thank you.
I will only come around this question, which I'm deliberately joking you to go deeper into.
No, please go into it. Go into it, Ron Lenzana.
No, fine. Look, DM. We have been receiving allegations flowing out there. They have never been formal to us as the committee, relating to your service providers, some companies which exploited the desperation that the country was in during COVID. And now there were claims which were made in your department unfounded and all. So if you could put us at least on the clear spot, move us from the blind spot as to, one, did it happen that you have some of the companies exploiting the department, taking advantage of whatever that you were faced with at the time? If yes, were you able as a department to pick up those and what is it that the department is currently doing? Not necessarily following this under the normal departmental procedures, but now in terms of naming and shaming. Because if it were you and me caught in this type of shenanigans, our names would be flighted up there. But we don't see the department intend doing the same. Perhaps it would be because of color, I do not know. Because for me, what I've actually, you know, sensed and seen during this period was that corruption knows no color. Corruption knows no race. Everyone, if it's meant to be corrupt, would just be corrupt. And those of us who are committed to do good work, it's also regardless of color and race. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Lenzana. I'm not sure why did you want to hold back on that very important intervention. Honorable Tihale, do you have something to add?
Thank you very much. I think I gave to re amogela apology ya minister. And the presentation talks to transport, whereby Khayelitsha was given as an example, where there is a new labor center. If I can be clarified on that one, and also to check if ever these centers will at the end be able to be in all our villages, in our constituencies, and so on and so on. I did not understand well what was happening on that one, if I can be clarified, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tihale. Honorable Kaiso, do you have anything to add?
No, I'm covered, Chair.
Thank you so much. Let me join the oral members by thanking the Deputy Minister, Honorable Tumelo Moloi, and Head Dichi for the presentation. And thank you, the oral members, for the issues that they've raised. I'll also be adding on them. Our priority number two is economic transformation and job creation. So I just want to check, as far as economic transformation is concerned, how do you do it? And what would you consider to be your successes? And what are the challenges? And what are you doing with those challenges? A related question is, it comes to the question of localization, which you have identified as one of the main things as far as the economic reconstruction and recovery plan is concerned. How is the department helping this process of localization? Related to that is the question of broad-based Black economic empowerment, which is the policy of this government to try and redress what apartheid did to the Black people of this country. So it's not a, by the way, it's a very important thing. What is the department doing to ensure that the broad-based Black economic empowerment is attained in this country? And please tell us how you measure that. The next question is, what does Productivity South Africa do? What do you consider to be their successes? What do you consider to be their drawbacks? And what are they doing about that? It's very important, DG, that we should find the value that we are deriving as a country from this institution. The next question. In the financial year that has just ended in March, by how much did you underspend or overspend in your whole budget? What were the causes of those underspending or overspending? And what are you doing about that? Perhaps you may add, what are our expectations in the current financial year? Next question. What is the status of employment? It's related to what Honorable Kaiso raised. What is the status of employment equity in our country's concerned? Does the department do any research? And what do you do with those research outcomes? So I take it then we'll be able to get that that answer. You are going to town about the recruitment of young people, especially around the Presidential Employment Initiative. The question, where do you employ these people? I'll tell you why. When we go in the rural areas, the young people who are qualified, having very good degrees and diplomas and tertiary education and so on, they say we always hear about these initiatives, but they don't touch us in the rural areas. Can you share with this committee about your involvement in the rural areas as far as giving these young people employment opportunity, as we have just spoken about the number that we that you shared with the committee? And when you talk about rural areas, please, if you can, just indicate the areas where you have been and where this program has touched the young people. And at DM, we always stress that if that information is not readily available, we always say that let's not be giving convenient answers. The department should be able to say, no, we're going to go back on that one and we're going to give you a proper and detailed report as far as the question or the questions are concerned. Let me jump to TERS. Please share with the committee the successes of TERS, how much has been spent, the companies which have benefited, and also being in South Africa, if you can break down as far as your black companies which have also benefited from this scheme, women-owned companies which have benefited from this scheme, the businesses owned by young people benefited from this scheme, rural businesses who have benefited from this scheme. And then also, having done that, please also share with us the challenges perhaps that you might have encountered as far as this is concerned. I'll tell you what informs my question is that we have heard that there are companies who claimed on behalf of the employees, but never give the employees their benefits. Share with us all those challenges that you have encountered as far as that is concerned, because in my dictionary that is fraud. And please tell us what you have done with that, because it's a criminal activity. Would like to hear that if there are any cases which have been opened and the status of those cases. Let me come to the compensation fund. Please just share with the committee what is happening there. Assets under management in the compensation fund. What has been the audit outcomes in the past 5 years or so? My information says that the compensation fund have been receiving disclaimers, but please confirm that, because if that's true, that's very gross for an organization like the compensation fund. And what has been the main concerns by the auditor general as far as the compensation fund doing? What is the department doing about that? Just talking about disclaimer, it means the auditor general saying, I can't form an opinion. And that can't be normal on that when people are being given that responsibility, where the AG comes and say that I can't have an opinion on your financial statements. What is happening about that? CODA, that has been the level of compliance by companies with this act, and what is the department doing about that. I would leave it at that, Honorable DM. The meeting is coming back to you. You and your team, you decide which questions you pick up. Once you are satisfied that all the questions that have been raised by the honorable members have been dealt with, you'll return the meeting back to me. Honorable DM, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think I will start. I'm not going to start with your last question, Honorable Chair. You have raised a whole range of issues. I don't know whether such issues as raised by honorable members have they been forwarded to us. I know that you are supposed to think, we are supposed to think on the job. We are supposed to think we must not sleep on the job, but think while. So we are supposed to respond. But I thought these are very comprehensive questions, especially the ones that are posed by the chairperson himself. So before I even go to what the chairperson said, we must agree with the chair that the other information can be supplied in detail should the chair and the committee so agree, that we can then later on, we will respond to some of those questions that we can think off our heads. I must say that if I have to start with what you spoke about the last chair, let me just go directly to that. In terms of the COED Amendment Bill, we have brought this bill to Parliament. I'm sure honorable members should be aware. We have brought it to Parliament, and currently it was referred to the NCOP and for concurrence. And I think we got the feedback, honorable chairperson and honorable members, that the NCOP has just concluded its work on this piece of legislation. So we I think these are the progress on the issues that relates to the COEDA. And I think I think the DG and the commissioners and those who are here can be able to elaborate further. But remember also why we brought this COEDA amendment bill to was to include domestic workers. If you remember, because of that case that was subsequently concluded by the Constitutional Court of Mayor Mahlangu, who died after falling in a swimming pool of her domestic employer, and subsequently didn't get anything, and the daughter took this case up to Constitutional Court. So we are doing this precisely to include, among others, domestic workers under the category of employees, but also we are including a chapter dealing with rehabilitation and reintegration framework for employees injured or those who might have contracted occupational diseases at work. And we are also reviewing the benefit structure to improve benefits payment to both employees and their beneficiaries. But in terms of the, because the Honorable Chair, you spoke also, or one of the Honorable Members spoke about the issue of the employment equity. So we have also, I think currently there is that Employment Equity Amendment Bill, because we have given employers an ample time, Honorable Members, to regulate themselves, and we literally gave them a blank check to regulate themselves over the years, and the fact that employers have not been able to come to the party, we felt that ensuring that there is equity in employment and that the designated groups are not necessarily left behind. That is why we have actually brought this, we are amending the Employment Equity Act to empower the minister and labor of employment and labor to regulate this sector specific employment equity targets. So we are doing this, we are doing consultations with the relevant sector stakeholders, and we'll also be awaiting advice from the Commission for Employment Equity. So we are also trying to amend the fact that not everybody, not all the employers, we are targeting big employers, because small employers, it is too much, there is tedious processes that they have to undergo. So we are saying small employers would be exempted from complying with these administrative processes of employment equity, of conducting analysis of their workplaces, preparing employment equity plans, complying with sector employment targets, or submitting the reports. So amendment bills try to create a conducive environment for investment and for small businesses to grow and create jobs. Because now if you over-regulate those who are small, we might be stifling them to be able to do that which we want them to do. But also, honorable members, the amendments are intended to promulgate Section 53 of this Employment Equity Act, which deals with issuing of employment equity compliance certificates as a prerequisite for access to state contracts or to conduct business with any organs of state. Because it can be that especially big business, they play the devil's advocate. They don't want to comply. They don't want to be regulated, but they want to continue to benefit from state contracts. So we are actually putting this, we have put this forward to say anybody who must do business with government or any organ of state should actually comply to get a employment equity compliance certificate, which is critical in ensuring that financial benefits from the state only accrue to organizations that are committed and willing to contribute to the transformation agenda of this country. So that is why we are doing this, and we are saying that the state cannot continue to financially incentivize organizations and employers who are anti-transformation and those who resist complying with our labor laws. So in a nutshell, with regards to that employment equity, Chair, that's what I would say to those, and I'm sure the DG will respond to others. But if I have to go back to the issues which were raised by Honorable Mlenzana, especially the question that Honorable Mlenzana raised about naming and shaming employers who have, there are, yes, I must confirm, and I'm sure the commissioners and the DG will also confirm, Chair, that there are employers who have claimed fraudulently so for employees, which never existed. But over and above that, there are employers who claimed from PERS and never dispersed the monies to the employees. That is why we have a unit that will be explained further in details by the commissioner or the DG that deals with follow the money. And in terms of whether we have brought to book such people. Yes, indeed, honorable members, there are many cases that have come to the fore, and there are people who have been arrested. I can tell you of a case where Hawks have arrested a chartered accountant for fraud, theft and money laundering. The name of the chartered accountant is Mr. Mark Foster, who is out on a 10,000 rand bail from East London because he has defrauded the department by claiming tariffs to the value of just above 800,000. There are those we have currently recouped an amount of just above a billion rand through this process of following the money. That's what we have done over and above. There are those cases, and there are many, and I think we do have a report to that effect in terms of the people who have been arrested, whether they are part of our staff members who might have been participants in helping those who are defrauding our government or not. I think that report is readily available and can be made available to honorable members. And Honorable Mlenza also asked whether the department has the capacity to spend. I think I can boldly say yes, we are able to spend, and I think it is also this question is interrelated with the question of the chair when you were asking whether I think in terms of the report of our whether we are able the issue the report on underspending, overspending and stuff like that, and I think we will further say more on such a report, chair, when we report about our reports from the AG. And I'm sure we'll also over emphasize on the under expenditure that we had to incur based on the fact that, you know, some programs, and I think some of the things you'll understand, Chair, especially yourself, that you plan for some activities, and such activities does not necessarily, or the material conditions on the ground does not help you to actually then spend on what you have prepared for. I'll make an example about the recently held ILO Child Labour Conference, which we just held from the 15th of April to the 20th of April in Durban. That conference was supposed to have been held last year. Now, you would understand that it could not be held last year due to those unforeseen circumstances, and it was only held recently. And based also on the report that you might have received, that we did request condonement from Treasury. And sometimes I've seen that National Treasury people are here, but sometimes I really believe that some things which are not necessarily supposed to be rejected from Treasury, they are just willy-nilly and being rejected, because I think as one government we are supposed to be knowing these issues. Or what is this one on the left doing when the one on the right is doing? So I really think that sometimes it is unfair for or Treasury or any other government department to deny us a certain elements which can actually enhance our performance, in particular like the issue of condonement. And I know that they have to deal with other processes and procedures. But yes, we do have the capacity to spend, Honorable Mlenza. But also, as I said, the DG and the CFO will further elaborate on that. Honorable Dikhale, yes, we can present a report, I think, a breakdown report. I think it also was raised by Honorable Chairperson. We can report or indicate those opportunities province by province, maybe also break it down to districts and towns. And rural areas also are included in the towns. If you say Mount Frere, then you'll say Ilali Yase Mount Frere, you'll attach the village of that particular town. So so I think we our system is able to dissect that information and be able to provide such a report as to these opportunities from and also the question that the Honorable Mihale raised about the issue of us having to take the labor centers even down to the rural areas. Sometimes it is costly, I think, maybe we'll get that report. It will be very costly to open a labor center where the number of people or beneficiaries are little. That is why we have visiting points where we are able to go to a village on particular, they say other villages will go once a month, others will go bi-weekly based on the numbers. We will realize that we will go on a particular visit because we will get at least 150 beneficiaries who will come to the labor center or to that mobile center. But we have come with the issue of the buses, and I think we need to elaborate more on the successes of the buses. Because we do have labor buses that I think honorable members, when they have time as part of their oversight, can be actually, we can arrange to take you where the buses are or where you are maybe in different provinces, because the buses are operating in different provinces, where the services in the bus is actually a bouquet of services that when a client comes into that bus, when we have brought all the baskets in the every service in a basket or in a bus, when you have all the documentation, when you get out of the bus, the money is actually paid immediately into your account. We have even partnered with some banks which actually goes with us with the bus wherever we go. I've seen Standard Bank, I've seen Standard Bank and FNB. I think we are engaging other banks so that if a client or a beneficiary who is supposed to, who's due to receive any funds that are outstanding or due to that person, and they need to have a bank a statement that says you have opened a bank. So those banks are there to issue such a letter with a stamp or open an account on the spot for the beneficiary, and that is why the beneficiary's money will, I've seen it happening myself where we were, when somebody came with having one finger cut, and when they checked in the system, he got money instantly. So we have been able to do that. So I would like to invite honorable members to, we can even supply honorable members with a schedule of such activities of the buses as to where they are going in different provinces, so that honorable members, wherever they are, they can also be able to go and witness for themselves. But also most importantly, honorable chair, some of these opportunities, I think I want to talk about the opportunities that we spoke about, the 800,000 that are under review. Some of these opportunities are not necessarily, there are those that are permanent, and I should think we will be able to give you the numbers and as to where they are deployed, those that are permanent, but most of them are temporary. And you will agree with us, especially this, they are temporary from 3 months to 6 months, especially the assistant teachers. This, I think, is a good story to tell, and is a good project which can help us to deal with the not necessarily entirely, but slightly to deal with this unemployment to a large extent. Or if we have appointed between 350,000 to 400,000 assistant teachers for a period of 3 months, and the contract comes to an end, and we'll have to redo the contract. So I don't know why are we not appointing them fully, because we needed their service in the first place. And I think it also talks to the fact that in terms of our IGR, I think our intergovernmental relations is not enforceable to the extent that we need to be talking to each other, not working in silos like we used to. I think our department, which is actually checking and coordinating all the employments within different various departments, must be talking to Department of Basic Education. We must be talking to Treasury about how do we locate the budget, where do we get the budget, because we have to have a permanent budget for such. And it goes to also together with the issue of the EPWP. I think one honorable member also raised the issue of the EPWP. EPWP initially was not supposed to be a permanent EPWP project. It was supposed to be a project where people are also trained and capacitated to also later take other possible employment where there are such opportunities or where such opportunities exist. But we have actually turned to making the EPWP project something of a permanent, temporary arrangement. And I think we need to be able to review with that, because the EPWP, sometimes you find it either being under Public Works Department, in other provinces it's under the Premier's office, other areas it's under COFTA. So for as long as we are not able to also consolidate and to say this project of CP, community works programs, for instance, where does it fall under? Or how do we consolidate such other important projects that we bring together and make sure that because the service is needed. I think Honorable Taiso, I didn't capture most of the question that you raised, but I think yesterday our minister spoke about the issue. I think you raised the issue of Sibani. I think our minister actually went at length into explaining exactly what you are presenting now. Or for a, how does the CEO of Sibanye, who's getting 300 million, and the company is refusing just to give the employee an increase of 1,000 rand per month, but we have a CEO who's earning 300 million? This is the, I think it's a moral question that needs to be answered at some point by ourselves. And as to what do we think, and I think in the discourse, this matter is being discussed, and I think the Minister Mandashi is talking to the effect that we need to review Sibanye license. It might not necessarily be only Sibanye, but we might also, through our own department, through our inspections, either review some of these companies which are not necessarily compliant, and I think to be able to deal with such matters. I think other matters that I might not have captured, I think the DG will talk about the issues of that were raised by Honorable Telezi with regards to the priority number 2, that talks to economic transformation, issues of successes and challenges, issues that talks to localization and or understanding, overspending expectations in the current financial year. We can't complain any further of these austerity measures because whether we like it or not, we understand the fact that we've got an economy that is actually stagnant, and therefore we cannot be making any demands to further be allocated additional. We are trying to actually adopt to working with the little that we are given to do more with the little that we are given. And I think we are with, like the many other departments, but I think in the process of implementing austerity measures, other units are suffering that are very key, like the CCMA, and I'm sure we can't overemphasize the issues of the CCMA, because not only the CCMA, but also many other of our entities are also struggling due to these issues of austerity. And I think maybe this is the right platform for us to lobby this department, because I hope Honorable Chair and Honorable Members do know that we do have factories. And Treasury in particular does know that the Department of Employment and Labor has factories across all the provinces except for Mpumalanga. And the fact that we are dealing with, they are dealing with PPEs, we are dealing with linen for hospitals and many others, furniture, office furniture, school desk and chairs. I think the CFO will explain it clearly, or that Demorotoba will expand on it. I think there is either Treasury regulation that makes it impossible for the entity, the SEE, to operate to its full potential, because we are told that like departments cannot necessarily buy from us, because if the amounts goes up, I think they will explain that gibberish, for lack of a better word, Chair, I think is, they will explain as to what is the hold up with Treasury, that we are unable to utilize what we have as a department. And by the way, as a department, those factories are employing only disabled people, whether be they those who are intellectually challenged, to those who are physically disabled, are employed, and we recruit them from those special schools, by the way. So this is a very important and delicate division within our department that I thought that our government must support, especially Treasury. Chair, I'm sure the Commissioner will explain further issues of the successes of the tariffs. I think we are all aware that we have spent over 60 billion rands just to rescue the situation. But I can safely agree with you, with your concern, even if you might not have disclosed, Chair, that out of the 60 billion, I don't even believe that 10% of that would have gone or benefited Black-owned businesses, women-owned, young people-owned, or rural communities. I can safely actually tell you that mostly big business and white in particular have benefited more on the issue of the tariffs issues, the 60 billion. I don't even think 10 billion has gone to over and above our people who are getting only those little monies that they benefited from. But Chair, you raised the issue of employment equity. I think we have launched the report. There is a fully fledged report that was presented of unemployment equity, which was launched on the 2020 employment equity report was launched on the 26th of June 2021. We still talks to the fact that in top management, Africans are trailing at 15.8%. And colors are trailing at 5.7%, Indians at 10.6%, while whites are at 64.7%, and foreign nationals at 3.1%. So we do have, fortunately, a fully fledged report to that effect that can be made available to honorable members. We are not doing well as a country in terms of such figures, but I think the DG, the commissioners, and all our team members who are in this platform will be able to elaborate further on those issues that I might not have reached, Honorable Chair, on the issues of disclaimers, financial statements. We have the team, I think they will explain, we do have team called, disclaimer team that talks to the issues that are continuously raised by the AG, which are either of repeat offenses or repeat disclaimers. So they will explain further on some of those issues that I might not have reached. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't want to get too deep into this report. I think it's another speech from my side. Thank you so much.
DM, thank you. Obviously, you are calling on the DG and the team to fill in the gaps where you didn't go. And so they, as I said, it's we're in your hands. DG, do you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the CFO, Mr. Maduna, to just quickly touch on the finance issues, and Mr. Muradova on employment-related issues. And Kamel can then come in and add to what Mr. Muradova is going to talk about. Thanks, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I am going to respond to the finance issues that has been raised, starting with the very first one. If I can switch off my video, Chair. The very first one of capital expenditure meeting the cash flow projections to indicate that, yes, on a cumulative basis for the financial year, the expenditure that we do, or the cash flow that we do, does meet our expenditure, save for maybe some timing differences on a monthly basis overlooked during the financial year, where maybe the delivery is slightly late, hence the expenditure is not taking place as projected. However, the challenge comes on the expenditure that is not within our control. Here I'm referring to mostly capital projects which are undertaken by our department, Public Works, where I think we are really, really struggling, and we have, as a department, suffered on the allocation of capital projects. Because we will make a request for, as the department has got the national footprints in terms of the labor centers across the country, both government buildings and lease buildings, we will make a request as our colleagues in the provinces encounter problems with the buildings for some capital works to be undertaken. Only to find that expenditure will happen 2, 3, 4 years down the line, and we've got the challenge is here and now. So that's where I think we've got a huge challenge in terms of the expenditure and the cash flow being managed, probably through the DG, a joint response with the Public Works on this one will assist for future capital projects, because of the time it takes from the request we have made and the time it takes for the actual expenditure to flow through. That is the first one. The second one, in terms of localization, although probably given some time, I might probably give committee more in terms of graphs on figures. The localization, as we have seen from the presentation on the finances that we have made, that our operational expenditure is very low for the department. Basically, it covers the normal traveling expenses for the inspectors and for officials in terms of the overseas ILO duties. The goods and services included in there is the accommodation and the ICT expenditure, which takes quite a big chunk of money out of the little money that is left for operational expenditure. So the balance is mainly left for paying the accommodation and traveling for our officials. But I think given probably the time, the CFO might want to put some figures into this and how we are dealing with that. So apart from maybe the ICT cost, the accommodation It's a local one together with the traveling, but I will need to give the committee some information in terms of graphs and the amount for each category. The easier one, since I am reviewing the financial statements for presentation to the audit committee in few days, the understanding in this particular case for the department for the 21-22 financial year that we have just concluded. Chair, the soon to be a public information is just not so good. Our expenditure is 15% against the past under expenditure of around about 6%, 7% in the past 3-4 years. This time around, the contributing amounts to such a high under expenditure is the amount not spent for pathway management, which DG I think has elaborated on, which is 238 million, which was not spent. The next high amount is the compensation of employees due to vacancy rate of 155 million variance, followed by, I think the DM has touched on this one. We budgeted 45 million for the Child Labor Conference, which we earmarked to happen within the financial year. Unfortunately, it happened early in this financial year. And the 45 million that we earmarked, we requested a rollover for it, which at this stage, the indications are that our applications are not favorable. So we have that amount that we earmarked for that Child Labor Conference of 45 million. Followed by the 20 million, which I think my colleague DDG IES, Sam Rotoba, will allude to that 20 million on the project on IES. Followed by 18 million injuries on duty for our late reconciliation of the CF on those invoices, as a result that the whole amount was not paid over to compensation fund for claims against the injuries on duty of public servants. Those are just the high amounts. I think the balance is just a small amount, probably on goods and services and some capital works that were not undertaken. But these are the ones that are very, very fresh in my mind that I can indicate to the committee as amounts that have not been spent in the current financial year, which unfortunately contributed to the 15% underspending on our total budget. So I think I have covered the financial questions, save maybe for the localization in terms of the detailed expenditure per category. Thanks.
Mr. Sam Rotoba, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the 850,000 young people, in terms of the breakdown of where they participated, we can provide that information because the projects were not only limited to the Department of Employment and Labor. They happened across a number of government departments, and the format. For instance, the DM provided an example of teacher assistance in the Department of Environment. They had people doing different projects, etc. And Chairperson, if you allow us, we can provide that detailed information, including where those programs took place, their nature, the localization, and so on, because I don't have that information right now. On the 258, which is the 20 million and the 238 million that the CFO spoke about, it was the 20 million was for the appointment of interns. And Honorable Chairperson and members, you'll recall that this money came to us during October, and we had to do or set up the governance framework, the administrative processes in place, and the administration. And as a result, we could not spend the money, but the DG did give you an indication of the recruitment that we have done, which means that by the time we did the recruitment, it was towards the end of the year. We chose a long program that was a year long, so that we provide those young people with the necessary skills. We are giving them 6,667 rand, which is slightly above what the DPSA set of, that is 5,700. And this program is extensive because these young people are assisting other young people throughout all our labor centers. And we are not incurring any administration cost because we are using existing staff and the allocation in PES to administer and support these young people in the internship programs. And we have made a submission to Treasury, and we believe that this is one of the areas that they should also look favorably towards, because it will put us under tremendous pressure if we don't get this allocation. It means that we'll have to look within the department to carry these young people. And we believe that this, in the MTES, we had made a plea that we run it in line with the pathway management over the years, but the allocation that was given to us was just for a year. On the 238, again, it was affected by the same. We have made a submission for Treasury to consider the rollover as systems to roll out the pathway management were underway. And currently, we are finding some of the aspects from the 2022-23 allocation. And we believe that if we receive the 238 or a proportion thereof, we will be able to catch up and increase the numbers of young people that we are supposed to assist. The role of Productivity SA includes productivity promotion. Now, this program is funded at around 64 million, which is basically going towards staff salaries, rental for offices, and leaving very little towards productivity promotion. And no wonder the minister and everyone is concerned that we occupy 60 almost second or so position out of 63 countries in terms of productivity, because the productivity concept is not well embraced or understood throughout the country. And we hope that with more injection, we can see the work of productivity, just like other productivity institutions in other countries that we work with, occupying its rightful place. The second program is the Workplace Challenge, which is funded by the trade and industry. Currently, it is costing them more than 30 million rand, and the funding is only around 10 million. And they are not able to do enough in this area. And there is high demand for that program. As the department, we have also intervened and spoke to the UIF to fund the turnaround solutions, which is basically aimed at assisting companies that are not productive to turn around their focus. And this is a very, very good program. It's just that it's funded on a project basis and the entity is unable to make long-term plans because they depend on the project funding and they can't have people employed permanently because there's no guarantee for tomorrow on the project. The pathway vis-a-vis EPWP, I don't think pathway is replacing EPWP. EPWP is part of the pathway, the presidential youth initiative programs. We just make a distinction in terms of age of people in EPWP that are below 35 years of age and those that are above. But the intention was never to replace it, or it, they are counted as part of the pathway management. Now, on our role insofar as assisting some of the graduates of these programs into permanent employment includes registering them on the PES, that is the Public Employment Services database, which can be accessed throughout the country and through cell phone, internet. And we also register opportunities from companies. We work with CAPES, as the DG indicated, and other organizations. And we match the young people, including workers that were retrenched from various companies, with the opportunities that exist. We provide them with counseling and we facilitate their placement in those companies because we do a shortlisting in line with the requirements of the company and provide a list to the company. And then the company does the final appointment from the list that we provide. I think, DG, I've covered those questions that relate to PES, but Kamel can add as indicated. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Kamel can come in.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Members. I mean, I think Sam has covered it pretty comprehensively. I think maybe just a couple of points to flag in response to the questions, and thank you very much for them. I think some of them we've taken note of and will be reflecting on as part of the process going forward. But I think the points that I wanted to make, the one is that as part of the Pathway Management Network, we are, as the department, already coordinating with all of the government departments who've signed the MOU, so that, as Sam has indicated, includes the Department of Public Works as key opportunity holders, as well as Department of Trade and Industry, DHET, so we're ensuring that we're linking with skills, etc. So as part of that coordination process, we're meeting quarterly and are reflecting on how to ensure that people who are joining, whether it's EPWP programs or presidential employment stimulus, join any aspect of the any of the channels of the Pathway Management Network, including through PES or through other channels, depending on what works best for the program. And a key thing that we're recognizing is that young people are not staying in one opportunity. So I take the points that have been raised about why is the teaching assistant program not full-time, and I think that that's a complicated question and one I'm sure National Treasury and the department would have strong views on. Certainly the program the department has decided will be sustained, but the young people themselves do change to give other opportunities. And so the post...
Ms. Maro?
Hello? Yeah.
I requested that let's have our videos on, please.
Oh, apologies. Yes. Apologies. And so, but certainly what's happened at the moment in terms of the first cohorts of the, for example, teaching assistant program, they have all joined the Pathway Management Network. And we are tracking how many of them we are able to place into other opportunities. The results are not yet what we'd like them to be, but Certainly, we have got an indication of what percentage of those teaching assistants are resuming further studies, because some of them have become quite excited about the learning that they gained through the process, and which ones have gone into employment and which ones are still looking. And that information is available, and we could share with the committee if that would be useful. And that's something that we're building into all of the programs, and we'll be able to report some of the broader aspects of the stimulus in relation to geography. So that's broader than the Pathway Management Network, is already available on the Presidency website as a breakdown in terms of where the allocations have been. And similarly for the Pathway Management Network, by June 16th, I hope, we'll be able to have on our website in a transparent way the information about which young people have joined the Pathway Management Network, where they've joined, and where they're pathwaying to, including where those who have been on short programs have accessed. We're also working closely as a department, including through the Labor Activation Program with the Department of Higher Education and Training and Small Business, to look at a few key strategic programs where we're making sure that the young people that have gone through opportunities have access to learning opportunities to continue what they've developed and able to access further placement opportunities. And so I think that that's also part of the process and what we're coordinating at the moment. So I'm hoping, DG, that's answered any of the remaining questions. Although, as I said, Sam had responded pretty comprehensively.
Thanks, Kamel. Chair, I'll ask the Commissioner of UIF to talk on the COVID tests questions. Mr. Maruping.
Thank you, DG. I hope my video is showing on that side, Chair. I think, Chair, given the extent of the questions and the detail required, I'm going to give a high level and then commit to submit a detailed report by Friday, Chairperson. Let me start first with the payments to date. In terms of COVID test benefit, we've paid 64.3 billion rands. And this has been paid to 248,000 employers and benefiting 4.9 million employees. And over time, as we learned and our controls tightened, we also paid directly to employees. We have paid to 660,000 employees directly, to the tune of 2.7 billion rands. Some of the lessons, Chair, that we, the lesson that we learned here was there's been a lot of collaboration, in particular with the feeding center, the banks, the Hawks, NPA, SIU, and SARS. And this has led to us, for example, with the asset forfeiture unit, being able to arrest and bring back about 133 million rands through the function of the asset forfeiture unit. With SIU, we've been able to recover 22.3 million rands. And this was behind 750 cases of COVID tests that were reported in the process. And just to give some of the highlights, Chair, I think Mark Foster has been raised. We also have other bookkeepers that are also going through the process. Some of them have been arrested. They're on bail. We have syndicates that are going through investigation. We cannot disclose some of the details at this stage, but a number of syndicates across the country are being investigated with the assistance of the Hawks, NTA, SIU, and some of their assets has been arrested or has been contained, such that there's no movement in those accounts as a result of our relationship with the banks. We have 6 convictions, Chair, that can be confirmed. Some of them are going through sentencing. We had one case last week of a couple that are supposed to be sentenced, but the judge requested additional information in terms of their payment arrangement with UIF before a sentencing is confirmed. The other institutions, one of our greatest success was one company that we were able to arrest to an extent that we had paid them just over 113 million rands. But in that engagement, with the help of the banks, the fusion center, we're able to recover the whole amount from that company that has been paid back to UIF. And that's the extent of our collaborative work with the fusion center, the banks, the hawks, and NPA. That has brought about a much higher impact on arrest recoveries. We employed the work of a follow the money, as the deputy minister touched on. Through that process alone, we have been able to recover 918 million rands. But the good thing with the follow the money, it has triggered an additional 2.5 billion rands that has been paid back to UIF by companies who saw the fraud case that were reported in the media, that saw the arrest, saw the court cases. They immediately started paying back money to UIF. And at this stage, 2.5 billion rands has been paid back to the institution. I think, Chair, with respect to the issue that you've raised around the business types owned by women, rural, province, black-owned, young people, I think we'll put together in the report that we'll submit on Friday that level of detail, just to give that sense to the community. I think I'll stop at that, Chair, or on the high level. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner Compensation Fund, Mr. Vuyoma Fata.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I may, I will not be able to switch on my camera, but I have a photo on. I have a cracked camera on the screen, so it doesn't show.
That's okay. That's okay, Commissioner.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chair. So when it comes to, starting with the first question, Chair, that you've asked, when it comes to the assets of the compensation fund under management. So as at the 31st of March 2022, the total assets that the compensation fund has is about 92 billion. And the net assets, when you've taken into account the liabilities, both for pensions as well as for future claims, we have net assets of about 48 billion that the compensation fund has. The audit outcomes of the compensation fund, correct, Chair, as you said, it has been a disclaimer opinion. It has been a disclaimer opinion for a number of years now. The fund has been dealing with a number of systemic issues related to the weaknesses in controls and systems, in processes around management of claims and collection of revenue. And there has been a number of action plans developed and adopted by the fund and the department to correct the weaknesses that have been identified, resulting in some of the newer systems that we've now implemented, some of the legislative changes that we've made, some of which the DM has spoken about, to try and correct the policy environment as well as the operational environment within the compensation fund to allow for a much better audit outcome. In the current year, the DG has then appointed a set of specialists that are working in the compensation fund to work with management to try and assist with dealing with now that we've corrected the systems, to try and deal with the issues that have occurred in the past that are still continuing to find themselves in the financial statements of the fund. So correction of prior issues as well as putting in place some of the monitoring controls that we need to have to make sure that the audit outcomes at the fund are improved. And this is work in progress. We are anticipating that for the audit year, for the 2022 financial year, there would be a slight improvement in the audit outcome, though it would not take us to clean audit outcome yet, but we are making a way towards that. So there is an action plan that is being tracked and monitored that we are also presenting to the portfolio committee as well as to the governance structures within the department in terms of progress that we're making in implementing that clean audit action plan. And lastly, Chair, you asked about the levels of compliance in the compensation fund. The levels of compliance from employers is concerning, Chair. It's quite low. We have a compliance levels just below 50%. Of registered employers. And to try and address that particular problem, we have created a specialized payroll inspections unit within the department's inspection and enforcement branch. And we've also taken over the funding for the occupational health and safety inspections in the department to make sure that we can increase capacity there. And the capacity has been increased. And these are the things, initiatives that would also then help us to improve compliance levels by employers, both with regard to registration, payment of claims, as well as making sure that the workplaces are kept safe, and where there is breaches in the controls that they've implemented, there is timely and adequate reporting of incidents to enable funds to be able to attend to those that are injured at work. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to zoom on those areas where we have not responded. You raised a question about our role in terms of economic transformation and ensuring that the economy as it grows is inclusive. One of the instruments that we're part of the economic cluster, which affords us an opportunity to see what other government departments are doing in terms of the policy development and the policy implementation. And our role is to make sure that whatever policies that are developed are geared towards ensuring that as the economy grows, that growth encourages absorption of people in employment, and that growth is inclusive. As you would know, that in the past the economy was growing at around 5-6%, and yet we're still plagued by high rate of unemployment. And I think that's why your question around localization is very, very important, because we should not be importing things that we can manufacture in South Africa. So our role has been to work closely with other government departments, DTIC, to make sure that localization is indeed implemented. These are part of the social compact that President has been speaking about. All the sector master plans that are there are a product of that engagement, and as a department we're part of the engagement. The second instrument that we're using is what the DM spoke about, the employment equity. Part of what we're bringing to Parliament is the promulgation of Section 53 of the Employment Equity Act, which we delayed a long time ago because we were giving an opportunity to employers to be able to do what's best for the country, and they asked for self-regulation. We allowed them to do so. We allowed them to set their own targets in terms of employment equity. Over the years, as the report from the Employment Equity Commission has been showing us, that there's just no will to transform. When you talk about successes, I'll just give you one example. I'm sure honorable members have heard of the agreement that we reached with Huawei. When we analyzed their employment equity reports versus the employment equity plans, we realized that they were nowhere near what they said they would do, where the company was actually 95% Chinese, and even flouting the investment threshold of 60% to 40%. So we took them to task. We took them to court, and they then asked for out-of-court settlement. And we agreed, and part of the settlement includes that by a certain time they would have appointed that their complexion would have changed completely, and 50% of their employees would be South Africans. But what is more exciting for us is that they've undertaken that they will take a number of IT graduates in, train them, and then employ them full-time. The second aspect that excites us in this agreement is that they will take young people who do not know anything about IT
take them through training program, and also provide them an opportunity to learn inside the company. So I think we got what we wanted. All what we need to do now is to monitor that, the implementation of that of that agreement. So the other thing that we do, Chair, which we think that contributes immensely to job creation, besides the legislation that we come up with, is the issue of ensuring that there's stability in the labor market. Without that, the investments that we that the investors that we are inviting to the country and the investments that that have been pledged will not see any light if the labor market is not stable. That's why the CCMA is working tirelessly. They've got a strategy called InfoFelelo, where they work closely with the companies so that they prevent disputes. So their dispute prevention strategy is working very well. And so far, we've had fewer strikes compared to what we used to have, previously. If you read the report that we publish on an annual basis, the industrial action report shows that indeed there's some good work that is that the department and the entities are doing. Of course, the challenge is that companies are playing a lip service to the whole concept of economic transformation. We haven't seen much in terms of that, and we're hoping that with the this employment equity bill and the power of government, in terms of procurement of goods and services, we'll be able to use that as an instrument to force companies who want to do business with government and to comply. That's the same sentiment that I would express, Chair, on the broad-based black economic empowerment. We work very closely with the commission that deals with broad-based black economic empowerment. And we use the same logic and thinking in terms of how we've structured the employment equity. And in fact, our report is also used by them in arriving at some of the reports that they generate. One of the things that we want to focus on now is really the issue of income differentials. And we've seen, I think there was a question raised by one honorable member here, in terms of what our opinion are with regard to what is happening at Sibanye mine. And we feel that it's really, really absurd that you can have the huge gaps that you have in terms of what management is earning versus what workers are earning. And workers are asking for 1,000 rand. A month, and the company is saying no, and yet they are paying the CEO 300 million rand. So those are the things that we're looking at, working with the Employment Equity Commission to make sure that we point those things out and we take companies to task so that those things can be addressed. Yes, we do research, Chair. The Employment Equity Commission is responsible for this work, and as DM indicated, the issue reports on an annual basis. Also, I think DM touched on the role that is played by the supported employment enterprises to make sure that we empower disabled people to participate in employment activities through these factories. I just want to put this thing into context, Chairperson. is think of the public, the productivity South Africa. We've been at pains trying to solicit support for both productivity South Africa and the supported employment enterprises. Now, these factories, for instance, if I were to just spend a little bit of time on them, they're meant to empower disabled people. And in the olden days, they enjoyed preferential procurement status, meaning that the government was, procuring, government departments were procuring desks and other garments and all that from this entity. And we never had issues relating to the fact that they run out of money and we have to bail them out every now and then. And also the mindset, Chair, that these factories will have to generate a lot of income. The type of people that work there, have, some of them, when they need a break, you have to give them a break because of the kind of disability that they have. So when you measure your just in time in terms of delivery, don't use the same principles that you would use when you're looking at a normal company because of the kind of disability that they have. So we've been only getting support from the Western Cape provincial government. And that's what has been sustaining these companies, except of course with the annual allocation that we get from National Treasury. For productivity South Africa, Chair, I think Mr. Mrotoba has indicated what is it that they do. The point that I would like to raise is government does not want to use these entities. So government departments will rather go out and use private companies, whereas you have a government entity, we spend money paying remuneration every year, and yet we have a resource in government and we don't want to use this resource. And that's why our competitive ranking has been going down, because we think that we don't want to listen to one another as government departments. Chair, I'll leave it at that. I think we've responded to all the questions. With the data that is needed that we don't have now, we will make sure that Chair, that you get the data as soon as Friday, which is what the Commissioner UIF has indicated. Thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Members.
Thank you, DG and your team. Honourable DM, before I close, do you have anything to say? DM?
No, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think that's far we could respond to, and any outstanding information, as the DG has alluded to, will be presented to Honourable Members in due course. And we thank you so much for having invited us, and we continue to promise that from our side, we'll continue to support the work of the committee and to be of assistance with any information needed so far. Thank you so much. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Deputy Minister Boitumelo Moloi and your team, thank you very much for taking time to interact with the committee. Just for completeness, the Standing Committee on Appropriations is dealing with the 2020 Appropriation Bill, which is the allocation of money between and amongst the national government departments. This is a follow-up to the Division of Revenue Bill, which divides money amongst the three spheres of government.
So we've interacted and you have provided some valuable information, and we'll request that the information which you have promised, please supply that information. But before I close, I think I'll just make two comments. DG, there are issues which reside with the executive. For instance, we are making an issue about other departments not wanting to support your department on some of the initiatives through your institutions. I think that it's a valid point. But I always take it that there a lot of, you have got your DG's forums, you have there's cabinet and so on. I think let the executive deal with its issues, right? Let the executive, because we don't want to get the impression that you are operating in silos. And we also don't want to be seen to be overreaching. But the issues which are between and amongst departments, let them be resolved at that level. And ultimately, those things should be elevated to the head of the executive, the president, and we resolve those issues. Number two, DM, we were still going to have an engagement with the compensation commission. I'll tell you why. You can't have an institution which is managing about 92 billion rands getting disclaimers. It's from where we are seated as the committee, there's a crisis, and it can't just be business as usual. We want to get closer to that. We are responsible as parliament for the funds of the people of South Africa. So definitely it's for us, it's not amber, it's red light, it's a crisis. And we are still going to engage, even if we are good selves as the political heads of that institution. That what's happening. A disclaimer is the worst audit opinion that you can find, where the Auditor General is saying that we can't form an opinion on 92 billion rand. So I'm sure there are issues. But it's not just a one-year thing, or two-year thing, or three-year thing, or four-year thing, or five-year thing. This has been an abnormal situation has been normalized. A lot of departments don't have so much money under their management. So we are having an institution, a 92 billion rand institution, and I think at a political level, we'll take it up with your good selves. But rest assured that we are still going to engage with the compensation fund and to better understand the situations here. We deal with rents and cents here. We look at how well the monies of the public are managed. We also want to see the impact of that money. DG, that can't be normal. So I'm just saying that as I give you part costs, definitely there needs to be a further engagement on that. With those words, thank you very much for availing yourselves at DM. We know that these days there are a lot of things that call for your attention, but you took time to come and engage with the committee and with the people of South Africa as to what is happening in your department. Thank you so much. You are excused. But if you want to remain, we are a transparent committee. You may remain until we finish the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable
Thank you, Chairperson.
I think we will actually recuse ourselves.
Yes, Badek.
No, you just said it. You've got many other issues that we must attend to. Thank you so much for the invite.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Honourable members, Darren, do we have any announcements?
Chairperson, yes. I received an apology from Mr. Sarupen after the meeting has commenced. Yeah. And then our next meeting will be on Friday.
with the Department of Water and Sanitation. Meeting will start at 9.
Water and Sanitation?
No, not Water and Sanitation. Social Development. Sorry, Social Development.
They have a tanda. You love them. Okay, no, it's social development. Let's give you the other matter that you spoke about yesterday evening, Darren. Does you remember? My matter and your matter.
No, okay. Jefferson, you can go ahead with that one, Jefferson.
No. I was saying you must call me. We'll be having National Treasury making a presentation on the last quarter performance of the last financial year, I think on the 1st. But in that meeting, we've also asked, because now they've got the whole picture as to what is happening, we've also asked National Treasury to tell us about the departments which are underspending, so that will be part of their presentation, something which this committee has focused on. Yes, that's the matter that I wanted to bring to the attention of the honorable members. In the absence of any other announcement, honorable members, thank you very much. Our support staff, everybody on the platform, this meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you,
President.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mashile.